Welcome to the American Classroom Podcast, where we discuss the role of education in building a civil society. I'm Jared Taylor, the host, and I'm with Lindsay Crosley, my co-host today. How are you, Lindsay?
Good, doing well. Good morning.
We're excited to have Shane Krauser with us here to talk about America's 250th birthday. And so, Shane, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
This is going to be fun.
Yes.
When Lindsay and I were thinking about who we would have on, and we're going to have a lot of people talk about the 250th birthday of our beautiful country, your name was at the top of the list. I'm like, we've got to bring Shane in to talk about this.
Well, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
And we're recording this in October, and so we have this build up to the official anniversary, 250th anniversary.
It's an exciting time.
Yes.
It is.
Really is an exciting celebration.
And it should span more than a year. I mean, earlier this year was when the shot heard around the world, you know, Lexington and Concord celebrated their 250th anniversary. And Paul Revere's ride, and, you know, one by one, it's fun to see, mostly up in the Northeast, how they're celebrating the semi-quincentennial. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
So anyways, thank you. Heritage Academy is a sponsor of this program, and Heritage Academy and the family of schools there, they love our country, the founding ideals, and excited to have this topic here today. Before we get into it, though, let's give a little background on Shane. And Shane, I've known you for a couple of years now, which is great. Always admired the good work that you've done. Those that you don't know Shane, he's a published author. He's a nationally recognized speaker, expert on the Constitution, not just from its original, but also all the precedent. He's practicing, a recovering attorney or practicing attorney?
Recovering.
We'll let him clarify that. Great background and putting bad guys away, and now just doing great things, and we're going to hear more about that. So, Shane, we're excited to have you today.
Thank you.
Why don't we just start a little bit? Give us your initial thoughts on the 250th anniversary of our country, and then we're going to start digging in a little bit more.
Well, here's what I know. If you were born in America, you won the lottery. And the foundation of that is really grounded in this Declaration of Independence that was solidified in 1776, which was unlike anything the world had seen up to this moment in time. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've got to do is get people to fall in love with the idea of liberty all over again. In fact, it was Walter Williams who said, the great economist, he says, if we really want to shift the culture towards more freedom and less government, back to the founding ideals, we've got to get people to fall in love in liberty with liberty all over again, mm-hmm. with this main ingredient being limited government. And that was really the foundation of this Declaration of Independence that we're going to move on here over the next several months, next year, yeah. and be involved in celebrating. And so I'm excited to be involved. I'm excited to be alive during this moment in time and to be a voice to remind people how fortunate we are to be here.
It's fun to see. I've noticed as I'm watching like a college football game, you'll see the Ford F-150 ads, and they have the 250th anniversary logo, and they're starting to pop up now, and it's becoming more and more. And it's fun to kind of be on that. So, but Shane, take us a little bit back. How did you learn to fall in love with the founding ideals and values of our country?
So I'm a first generation American. My mom emigrated here from Switzerland in 1949. Her, along with her two siblings and her parents, boarded a boat, found themselves in New York, and eventually settled in Salt Lake City. And they were really motivated by the uniqueness of what America had to offer, that you could keep the fruits of your labor, what it really meant to be free, a different form of government. It was very attractive to them. Mm-hmm. And so my parents, my mom, came here, and I watched my grandfather build a great business, and came here. They didn't speak a lick of English. They learned the language. They integrated into the culture in a fascinating way. And so as I grew up around the dinner table, we were having these conversations about what it meant to be free. What is American exceptionalism? Is America unique? And having the conversations around the uniqueness of America. So I was learning these things at a very young age. And I remember at the age of 13, my mom bought me a book. Here I was right here in Mesa. And the book was by Ezra Taft Benson. And I remember reading that book, and something just really blossomed within me to the point where I said, this is what I was born to do. I was born to promote freedom. So, and by the way, the name of the book is An Enemy Hath Done This.
Oh, yeah.
By Ezra Taft Benson. And so it just gave me a broad perspective of America its uniqueness, what it means to be free, what the proper role of government is, what some of the dangers are that we need to look out for that could jeopardize the experiment. And so I just fell in love as a teenager and began to take the journey of where I felt God wanted me to go to be an advocate for these ideals.
Wow. And now you speak all over the country and you published a couple of books, at least. I know two of them. Maybe you published more. They're excellent.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, yeah, my first book was Your Nation to Save, which is a line-by-line explanation of the Constitution. The second book I authored is called What is Freedom? Is it for You? The subtitle is 25 Ideas That Will Change the Way You See America. Then I co-authored the Arizona Gun Owner's Guide with Alan Corwin. And I've got another book that's coming out here shortly called Your Freedom to Reclaim. Nice. It's a line-by-line explanation of the Declaration of Independence. Nice. And I've enjoyed using that platform to move the message and, as you mentioned, been able to speak all over the country. In fact, I'm real excited about what's coming. I'm going to Nova Scotia. So it's not just the United States. It's up into Canada to move this message. And so anyways, it's been fun to move outside of the United States and watch the excitement that others have for freedom and want to know, how do we bring this to our culture? How do we get people to come alive for these ideas? And that's been fun to be involved in that particular effort.
What do you think is, if you think about that, like the barriers or the biggest misconceptions people have for the ideals and values of our country, what do you think those would be that people need to overcome or understand a little bit more about to get past some obstacles? What would you point to?
I think there's two things. Number one, what it really means to be free, mm-hmm. and the proper role of government. I think those are two really big things that I see just as I've engaged as a college professor. I did that for over a decade, and I watched students come into my classroom that had thousands of hours of compelled education through the public schooling system, mm-hmm. and they sit in the classroom, and they have some really warped ideas about what it means to be free and what government's role ultimately is. And then, you know, watching the young kids, you know, with I'm involved in the homeschooling community, and watching some of the homeschoolers, of course, they're much better than what I experienced in terms of a foundation that I saw for many of the public school students. But just some little misconceptions here and there on what it means to be free. My perspective on freedom is it's all about agency. Allow individuals to exercise their agency. And so long as they're not infringing on the life, liberty, or property of another person, leave them alone. In fact, that's one of my big mantras is just leave me alone and leave my neighbor alone and leave my friends alone. Just leave people alone. And government's role in that process is to ensure that we're left alone and that if someone violates the life, liberty, or property of somebody else, now government plays a very important role in providing justice, right? We learn in the Declaration of Independence to secure these rights. Governments are instituted among men. So the founding fathers didn't see government as a foreign entity, right? It wasn't a foreign concept to them. They saw government as playing an important role. And I think today, what we so often see with students coming out of K through 12 and then going into college, they see government as providing something for them, giving them something for free, and not recognizing that when government plays that kind of a role, you slowly lose your freedom. And so freedom is a dangerous concept. In fact, I love what Thomas Jefferson said. I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. And freedom can be risky, right? Because you have to be responsible for the decisions that you make and the consequences that come about for those decisions. Today, we say, hey, I'm making decisions. And hey, if I get caught in a run, government's going to bail me out in some way, right? Whether you're talking about corporate America or the little guy. It doesn't matter. And that's not what was intended when our founding fathers put this experiment together. So I think those are the two big things. I think other things that come to mind are things like what form of government were we promised, and really understanding what that looks like and what that means. So I think there's a number of issues that I know you're involved with and I want to be involved with in providing clarification and hope.
Yeah, people get scared by risk. And so they look to people that give them security, and they'll give up their liberties for that security. You know, Franklin talked about that quite a bit. That trade-off that you make between security and liberty. But I know you have background in public school, charter school, homeschool. You support so many different things. What do you let's talk about the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because an American classroom, we hold that we're defining the future of our country. What happens in the classroom is going to be the future of the country.
Yes,
for good or bad. And what happened? And that's, we're not talking just about government schools or charter schools or private or home, right? Even in homeschools, that's helping to shape the future of the country. What needs to change? Because there's so many young people coming out of the K-12 system, and they believe in socialism. They believe in these things that are antithetical to the ideals and values of our country. And they go to college and become radicalized. And if they haven't already been in high school, what needs to change in the K-12 system so people really understand what it means to be free and how that's better than the alternatives?
We need to ask different questions. I think that's where it starts. I think mm-hmm. when you go into the public school system, what's oftentimes being discussed is there's a problem, therefore government's job is to fix it. And that's not the idea behind this American experiment. The idea is there's a problem, which entity in our society is best situated to solve that problem? Government's supposed to play a very, very limited role. It's primarily securing the rights. Other than that, when we talk about societal issues, almost every single time you have private enterprise, church, and charity that are better situated to solve those problems. So I think that's number one, mm-hmm. understanding that government's not there to solve all of your problems. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're very ineffective at solving most problems. But in addition to that, when I was, I'll take you on a little bit of a journey here real quick. So I taught at the collegiate level for over a decade. And as I mentioned, many of my students had really interesting ideas about the role of government and the principles of freedom. And so on the first day of class, they would spend 16 weeks with me, 3 hours a week for 16 weeks.
Okay.
And this is the constitutional law course. And I would ask them three questions on the first day of class. Who here wants to be left alone? Do you know, in all of my years in teaching, I never had one student, regardless of their background, regardless of the perspective that they brought to the table, that didn't raise their hand. 100% raised their hand. They want to be left alone. Second, I asked them, who believes that government should follow the rules? I never had one student not raise their hand. Now, admittedly, most of them didn't even know what the rule book was outside. It's the Constitution. They didn't know what was in it. And then the third question I would ask is, who here believes you should be able to keep what you earn? Now, I had a few students that took issue with that because, you know, they bring some of those components or understanding around socialism and communism to the table, but they soon learned that those aren't viable options. But I found it fascinating that I asked those first two questions, as we moved in to talk about things like free speech, the free exercise of religion, freedom of assembly, the right to bear arms, due process rights, that I was able to help them see things perhaps through a different perspective. So for example, we move into free speech and I'd bring up a real issue and the students would debate it. And I would stop them during a debate and say, hold on, I asked you a couple of questions on the first day of class. You remember that? Yes. I asked you whether you wanted to be left alone. Do you remember what you told me? Yes, sir. I said, I want to be left alone. And then I asked you, don't you believe government should follow the rules? And how did you respond? Sir, I said that government should follow the rules. Well, tell me, help us understand why you're now taking a position with regard to free speech that revolves around you telling everybody else what to do and is a gross deviation from the rule book, namely the Constitution. Massive transformation. In other words, they had never been encouraged to look at the issues that we're dealing with societally through the lens of leave me alone or through the lens of, yeah, government does have a rule book and I probably should understand what that rule book says before I jump to any conclusions. I'm telling you, Jared and Lindsay, I saw massive transformations with these young people. I saw young people that saw the Constitution as old, outdated, archaic, and many of them even said evil, fall in love with America, fall in love with freedom, become emotional about the things that they were learning and feeling as though they had been duped for so long through the K-12 process. For me, that was empowering, that to be involved in that, mm-hmm. that process of helping them see things just a little bit differently that would set up a foundation for great things to come in their life as they analyze things politically.
That's amazing. And to do that at the college level, where some of those ideas start to be so embedded, you know, we hate our country or we hate this race because of what they allegedly did or not. But congratulations to you on successfully opening minds to what's actually working. You know, when we think about the semi-quincentennial, I mean, yeah. Is that right? The 250th birthday. We often think of Calvin Coolidge's famous speech at the 100th birthday. And in a very short summary of what he says is, show me something better and we'll do that, right? Because he lived in the progressive era where people tearing down the founders, tearing down the ideals. That's where a lot of the disdain for our country started, in that progressive era where they started to reject those ideals and values of you know, Washington and Jefferson.
Yeah.
And that's such a great, you know, you say questions, right? I would add that to the question, show me something better.
Yes, that's great.
Right?
Yes.
I like how Churchill, the British bulldog, answered it. He says, capitalism is the worst form of economics, except for everything else.
Yeah, right, right.
It's like, okay, well, show me something else. Show me how socialism's worked better or capital.
Jared, that's such a great point, though. I love that. And oftentimes, I know you've talked about this with, you know, as you've run Heritage Academy and you're out there speaking as well. I often talk about, hey, listen, explain to me how we went for thousands of years riding horse and buggy, and 110, 120 years after we get this American experiment started, we're flying airplanes. Explain to me what happened. Those things didn't happen in spite of the Constitution or in spite of the Declaration of Independence. They happened because of them. You suddenly allowed individuals to keep the fruits of their labor, and individuals were incentivized to produce and create a better culture, right? For everyone could prosper. Everyone could have a dream on their heart and mind and come in and work hard and make it a reality. And I think so often we forget and we take it for granted that because the things that we've experienced are because of what our founders put in place, this whole natural rights theory found within the Declaration of Independence that in turn is solidified in our Constitution.
Yeah, it definitely catalyzes innovation.
Yes, absolutely.
So young people today are, we talk about a concept that, we just had a couple of leadership sessions and I introduced this concept called VUCA. And it was really introduced in management research by like a Warren Bennis. He wrote a lot of good management business leadership. The Army College adopted it, and VUCA stands, it's an acronym for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. This is the world they live in. We live in a VUCA world. The Army adopted it to adopt, to create strategies around how they could fight wars in VUCA context, right? And so we're looking at it in an education context. I don't know that anything brings more clarity to this VUCA world that our young people live in than what you just quoted, those 55 words in the Declaration of Independence. I mean, those are the most powerful political words ever, in that they were endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. A lot of people focus on that, which is important, but I always like to emphasize, what are those rights? We know that they're life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And for someone to understand that they have that in themselves the minute they were born, and they still do to the extent they want it, they haven't given it up to government or somebody else. You know, how do we get them to rediscover not just their rights, but rediscover how they begin to flourish in those rights? It's the basis of all human civilization. And I'd love to get your initial thoughts on that.
I think one is they need to understand what's in that document. Mm-hmm. As we begin to celebrate the 250th anniversary, it's inviting them to understand that document. So just as going back to some of my experiences teaching students or just out just speaking to groups in general, most people don't know what's in that document. They've heard we hold these truths to be self-evident, and then they know a few little bits and pieces that are there. But it's taking them back to that concept of we hold these truths to be self-evident. Mm-hmm. You know, what Thomas Jefferson originally wrote was we hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable. But I love that whole idea of self-evident, that we don't need to argue about it. In fact, I often joke that if I were Thomas Jefferson, what I would have said with that first phrase is, instead of we hold these truths to be self-evident, any idiot can understand what I'm about to write, right? In other words, they're clear as day.
That's right.
And so when you get people arguing and saying, oh man, look at what Thomas Jefferson did. He was a slave owner, and yet we're supposed to give credence and give him credibility because of what he wrote here. And I'm saying, have you taken time to read the document? Do you believe that you're endowed by your creator, or at least that your freedom exists by virtue of humanity? Everybody agrees with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one, very few people that I know believe that their freedom comes from government. What a bunch of bureaucrats might have to say, or that freedom comes from what a majority might say, or that freedom comes from a piece of paper. That was what was so unique about this. This is what was self-evident, that freedom doesn't come from anybody else. It exists by virtue of who you are. You're endowed by your creator. And so it's reminding them of those things. It's reminding them that if government's going to play a role, this is the role that they should play. And most people agree with those concepts, but you have to invite them to really understand what that means. Right? Short-term consequences, long-term consequences of adopting that theory, that natural rights theory, and what it looks like if you disregard it. Mm-hmm. And all we have to do is look at history. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what's so important as we look at 1776 with the Declaration and then the ratification of the Constitution in 1788, is to really understand the significance of those things. You have to understand what was going on, for example, in 1775 or in 1665. Or in 1565. This was unique, you know, when you're looking at how individuals have been governed for thousands of years, emperors, czars, dictators, monarchs, and suddenly the founders say, we're going to do something different. We've got to get people to really understand the significance of what they did, and that they did the work, and now it's our obligation to carry on with that torch.
Yeah, that's great. And I love your story about your mom taught you. You know, when I said, where did you learn your mom? It reminded me of the quote from Ronald Reagan that says, all great change in America begins at the kitchen table.
Yeah.
And I love that, because change, we've got to remind people where it is. We can lose freedom in one generation if we don't teach the younger generation. It starts at the kitchen table. Schools have an important role. Faith communities have an important role.
Should start at the kitchen table, yeah. But a lot of, you know, you saw teaching college that a lot of people come in, not only wasn't emphasized or taught at home, but it wasn't emphasized in the K-12 system. I have a friend named Mike who grew up in a family, let's just say, that didn't appreciate their liberties, mm-hmm. and didn't teach it at the dinner table. And then he decided to serve a 2-year service mission in Australia, mm-hmm. and really shifted his perspective on the liberties that he enjoyed in America. And, you know, he said the students in high school had no motivation to do anything after high school. They were just like, all I'm going to do is just collect a check. Yeah. Like, that was their future planning. And it was really discouraging. He loved the people, loved serving the people while he was down there. But it really gave him a new perspective coming back to the U.S. and his, you know, gone on to become a successful entrepreneur and really like taking the opportunity to appreciate what he has here. But I think it should start at the kitchen table, but for a lot of youth, it doesn't. Like, their parents don't care, or they think our country sucks. So I think, you know, any opportunity that we can have to instill that into youth, the appreciation for our country, you know, and hopefully families that are listening to this episode today might look up some resources that you produced or ones that are available and start to have that conversation.
Well, that enlightenment, as you talk about that one example with that young man, is so important, because it is the natural course of things for liberty to recede and government to grow, right? All we have to do, history teaches some powerful lessons. So if we don't have that kind of enlightenment going on, we're going to see freedom continue to recede. And what will we leave for the next generation? Mm-hmm. So I love that you all are doing what you're doing, that we're involved together in fighting for this idea that America really is, the concepts, the ideals are a shining light on a hill, and it's up to us to make sure that that fire burns bright.
I think once people get a taste of it, you can't go back once you know the benefits of it. But I think some people get discouraged, or they don't want to go there because it takes discipline.
Yeah.
Right?
It's hard work.
It's hard work. And like John Adams says, the Constitution was only written for a moral people. But I think in that beautiful American hymn, God Bless It, I think it's God Bless America, that where there's liberty and law, I've just been thinking about that a lot more. People really need to understand if there's certain laws that are kept, it actually opens up many opportunities, many freedoms in your life, right? It's very simple, right? If you brush your teeth and floss every day, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have a little more dental freedom in the world. Otherwise, you're not going to have a lot of dental freedom because your teeth are probably going to fall out.
Right? Well, this is really, Jared, I love that because it's all around the idea. We compromise. Yeah. Right? We tend to compromise our freedoms away because we say, well, there's this benefit over here. And if government will give me this benefit, I'm willing to compromise my freedoms. So we see some of that. You know, we see individuals that start to fall in love with freedom and then they're incentivized to start to give away their freedom.
Yeah.
Right? Line by line. And that's problematic. But to your
point,
that's
a pottage.
Yes, that's right.
It's amazing how cheaply people could be bought.
That's
and
right.
How cheaply they'll give up their freedoms for such little amount of money. And people need to realize with shekels come shackles. And that's like, it's just history. It's just the way it works. But no, that's great. Shane, so let's look forward. So of course the big 250th anniversary is in July of next year. Between now and then, tell us some of the cool stuff you're involved in, where you speak, how are you celebrating the 250th anniversary and what you're doing, because I want our listeners to know, and maybe they can, you know, join you and, or show up to one of your events, and we'd be happy to link anything in our show notes, you know, to what you're doing. It's awesome.
Yeah. So the general concept for me in terms of how I'm going to celebrate it, I remember an ecclesiastical leader saying, lift where you stand.
Okay.
And so for me, it's taking your talents that you've been blessed with and being a part of that effort to bring about more freedom and less government and this restoration of these principles that our founders solidified. And so as we do that, I'm doing a lot of speaking throughout the United States. And as I mentioned earlier, up into Canada.
I want to go to Nova Scotia.
You need to come to Nova Scotia with
That's
me.
Good.
Nova Scotia. I am so excited. I spoke up in Saskatchewan a couple of years ago and froze my rear end off. But it was so much fun. I've been down in Latin America, Peru.
Wow.
And Mexico, and working with young liberty advocates down there. And it's, what's so amazing, speaking of the Declaration of Independence, is it's interesting that many of those young people there love our founders more than many Americans do.
They more about them, too.
They know more about them. Listen, when you look at a place like Peru, and when I was there, we had many people come up from Venezuela. And we all know that Venezuela at one point was the wealthiest country in all of Latin America. And then government started with their shenanigans, printing money out of thin air. And now,
dumpster fire. Now.
Yeah. A dumpster fire. It's problematic. And so you have these young men and women coming to Peru when I spoke there. And I would talk about things like the gold standard. And there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Isn't that odd?
Wow.
You talk about the gold standard here, and that's like, oh, that's an interesting theory that these old dead founders put together. But you talk to Peruvians and Venezuelans and Colombians about the gold standard. They knew our founders got it right, and they're fighting for those ideas. And so for me, that's been so much fun to be able to travel. So I've got a travel schedule, and I speak to political groups. I speak to just groups that are all about education, and I'm so blessed. I am so blessed that I feel like God has put me in a position, and I just want to be a tool to bring that message about. And then I'm involved in the homeschooling world.
Nice.
I started an academy about a year and a half ago called Veritas Debate Academy, and our focus is a couple of things. Number one, Constitution, debate, communication, persuasion, and leadership. So I've developed about 5 courses where we have students from 10 to 18 come in and spend 14 weeks with me.
It's great.
And they learn these skills and they fall in love with America. It's so much fun.
I want to take one.
It is such a blast. And so I'm doing some of that. And then I'm diving into the ice cream world. Founding Fathers in Ice Cream.
Tell us about that. That's great.
I'm so excited. So there's an ice cream organization, an ice cream business out of Utah called Brooker's Founding Flavors.
Okay.
And the idea is when you walk into the ice cream tavern, it's not an ice cream parlor, it's an ice cream tavern, right? It's like walking into an 18th century tavern. All the young kids that are working there, they're dressed in Founding Father garb, the tricorn hats, the women are dressed in the bonnets. The ice cream flavors are named after Founding Fathers. The Sundays are named after events, you know, crossing of the Delaware, the Lexington and Concord. Well, my wife and I, we were awarded the first franchise here in Arizona. So that's coming here shortly. And for us, I'll tell you, it's not just about the ice cream. It's about a cultural move. It's about putting people in an environment where they can have fun and learn about these ideas that you and I believe are so important. And so it's just, again, it's kind of a countercultural move, for lack of a better term, where we're saying, listen, there's a lot of ideas out there where you can go and experience some of these things, and you're going to learn about bigger government or things that we don't necessarily agree with. Why not create something where it's fun, where young people are coming in and they're meeting George Washington.
That's fun.
And they're meeting Thomas Jefferson. And they're meeting a Patrick Henry. And they're getting, shake hands. And the parents are loving it. And the kids are thinking, man, these guys are pretty cool. And they're just learning about the general principles as they enjoy kind of a Disney dining experience around ice cream.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Jefferson bring ice cream to America from France?
I don't know that, but I thought I read that somewhere, Lindsay.
Maybe correct me if I'm wrong. I thought I read that somewhere. Maybe that's totally false, but we'll have to check. We'll have to check on that one. But that, if it's true, it's perfect.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I got to tell you, when you go in, you'll see the different flavors, again, as they're named after the different founding fathers. And Patrick Henry, for example, his flavor is, listen, if you go in there and say, I want chocolate ice cream, we're going to have you step outside and you're going to come back in and try it all
over
again.
That's not working.
It's give me chocolate or give me death.
Give me chocolate.
Right? So anyways, just a fun concept. We are so excited about it. So my wife and I, we are just having so much fun being involved in just a number of different things and doing what we can.
Well, I'm a descendant of Nathan Hale, the little spy, the teacher spy from George Washington. So I'm going to try the Nathan Hale flavor if you have it on your menu.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Nathan Hale, he was the one who said, I wish I had, more than one life to give for my country. And that's the spirit, right? That's the spirit of, man, just you get one shot at life. You get one lap around the track. We're born in this special time in history. There's no other time in history I'd rather be alive. In the midst of the fight, in the midst of the chaos, that I get to be involved in a fight to bring about more liberty and hopefully pass on to the next generation what they're entitled to. They're entitled to freedom. It's God's gift. And so it's an honor to be involved in that.
Well, I think with all the VUCA, the crazy that's going on, I think people that see what's going on in the liberty movement see clarity, see hope, see things that work, right? Not false promises from corporations or governments about, it's just the next project. Right? This is where the solutions are. That was one thing that my dad always said. America has the solutions to our problems. The founders had the solutions to our problems. That's why we're so relevant. And if we stop teaching that, what's the point?
Yeah.
We need to solve problems. This is practical. This isn't just theoretical mumbo jumbo. But
I often ask the question, freedom is the answer. What's the question?
Yeah.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question? Agency is the answer. What's the question? Anyway, it's kind of a fun way to
well, American Classroom has to make a showing at the new ice creams.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be fun? Maybe we'll broadcast or do a little live live shot and see what other people are tasting and how they love Liberty too, because Liberty tastes great.
That's right.
Never tasted better.
A lot of our audience are parents and they are listening and thinking like, how can I have better conversations on the dinner table? And I'm not a constitutional expert, so how do I have these conversations with my kids? So what do you recommend parents do to kind of maybe like, I haven't been doing a very good job of teaching these things. How can I start doing a better job?
So I think there's a couple things. There is number one, parents have to become students themselves. And really, I think the greatest example for me was watching my mother so deeply in love with America. And because she was such a wonderful student, she was able to have some of those conversations, because the conversations we had around the dinner table were around real issues that we are hearing about in school or that we are watching on TV. Our kids want to have those conversations. And the problem is if we simply let what's happening on the news educate them, many times they're going to come to the wrong conclusion. We have to teach them how to analyze the different issues. And what I mean by that is our kids should understand socialism and communism. They should understand Marxism. In fact, I believe in our schools, we should be teaching those things.
Sure.
But it should be juxtaposed to liberty, should be juxtaposed to capitalism. Because as you said, when you say find a better solution, well, let's talk about the solutions that have been tried and that have failed. So I think it's becoming a good student yourself and being passionate about the concepts, passionate about the principles, and allowing your children to see you in that situation. I mean, I love having these conversations about the different societal issues that we're dealing with today, whether it's flag burning or police are stopping you on a traffic stop, and what does the Fourth Amendment say about that, or the Second Amendment right to bear arms, really understanding those ideas and why the Founding Fathers put those things in place, and now having a discussion around those ideals as it pertains to the issues that they deal with day to day.
I love that answer. I feel like when you talked about your students being emotional, I feel like sometimes as a mom, when I'm talking about, typically it's around if I feel like our freedoms are being suppressed. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about how important it is to maintain our freedoms. And I get emotional. And sometimes my kids are like, are you sad? Mm-hmm. But I just feel joy around it. And it makes me emotional a lot of times. And so I think that that's impactful for my kids, for them to see how much I love our country and how much I appreciate our freedoms and how I try to stand up to maintain those freedoms. And so, but I'm a student too. I'm not an expert like both of you, but I feel like I'm constantly learning.
Lindsay, you're bringing up an interesting point that maybe I can just riff off here a little bit. You start off by saying you're not a constitutional scholar, but you love your country. And Shane's over here talking about how his mom changed his world. Was she a constitutional scholar?
She eventually went to law school.
Oh, did she really? Oh, wow.
But that was when I was late in my teenage years.
That was a long, long time after. Yeah, I guess the point I'm making, and I hear this from my wife as well. She's like, I haven't done all homework. I think some, maybe it's a generalization, but some women feel like they can't enter the space because they're not experts. They didn't get a law degree. Mm-mm. They haven't done a lot of homework. And that's a myth. That's not true, right? You can do with what you know, right? Just start with what you know. You know this country is the best alternative for your children. It's the best environment. You might not have a law degree. You might not have done all the homework. Obviously, the more, the better. But women should know that what they have is enough, and the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world.
That's right.
They have a tremendous amount of influence on their young people, and discussions they have over the kitchen table are hugely influential. And so any man or woman who feels that they don't know enough, or they're not good enough, or they don't have the background that some of us have in these documents or these personalities, yes, learn more. Yes, do that. But just start with what you have, what you know.
Well, I feel like this anniversary can be kind of
a
point of inspiration. Like, you know, I'm going to pick up Heritage Academy utilizes. So they have a citizenship class every day before or after lunch, depending on their schedule. And they study a series like The Real George Washington, The Real Thomas Jefferson, The Real Benjamin Franklin. So there's a series of books. And then there's a great one on Lincoln that they utilize. But I feel like maybe, you know, just read about the founders, you know, review the Constitution. You know, there's books available. So just maybe take that anniversary, like this upcoming year, to be a student.
Yeah.
Go visit, visit some places.
Yeah. But to your point with regard to Lindsay, here's what I know. I mean, we haven't talked in detail about this, but I know that you're deeply in love with agency.
Yeah.
That's the essence of America. That agency is the essence of the Declaration of Independence. For thousands of years, dictators are telling people how to live their lives. It's the divine right of kings. It's all of this nonsense. And suddenly the founders say, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Let people exercise their agency. And I think when people understand that that's the essence of the Declaration, it now becomes easier to say, listen, should we be protecting the agency of individuals, or is it our job to infringe on the agency? And I think that's where really exciting discussions start to happen. In fact, I'll tell you, some of the greatest experiences that I had was teaching students at the collegiate level, where I was practicing law by day. So I was a prosecutor for 12 years. I'd generally get off of work around 6, and I'd head out to the college, and I would teach 7 to 10, 3 nights a week. And very rarely did I ever get out of the parking lot before midnight. These were incredible experiences. Why? The students would come and gather around my car in the parking lot, and they'd want to know, well, where do you stand on this issue? Or the very special experiences for me were students, grown men, breaking down, crying in the parking lot, saying, Mr. Krauser, why have I never been taught these ideas before? How do I, and these were their words, how do I take this back to my people? Meaning, how do I take it back to my neighborhood? How do I take it back to my family? right? It was all around the concept of leave me alone, government following the rules that they never understood. Again, as I'd mentioned before, their perspective was government's supposed to solve all of our problems. And then they learn what it really means to be free, and they change, and they become emotional. And you talk about becoming emotional yourself. Yeah. When you understand these concepts, they become a part of who you are, and you want to spread the word. And so those were really special experiences for me.
Your gratitude grows.
Yes.
It swells for sure.
Yeah.
Who wants to go back to slavery once you've tasted freedom?
Right. That's right.
You don't. You want to stay free. But it does take hard work. It takes discipline. You know, it takes values. But that's the beauty of it.
And it's understanding that slavery, when you talk to young people, oftentimes they think slavery, whips and chains. That's not what we're talking about necessarily today. Government does all kinds of things to enslave you. You know, you look at our financial system today, what's going on? There's a form of enslavement. As an example, when government can print money out of thin air, that's a form of enslavement because what is it? It's a hidden tax. Now you're using more of your productive capacity to buy the things that you want. Small form of slavery. And we simply say, well, I want that. Government's going to give me free stuff. I'm okay with that. You're now selling yourself into slavery.
Yep. And your children and grandchildren.
Yes.
Shane, this is great. Thank you for coming on American Classroom. Thank you for sharing your passion and knowledge. I know this will be a fun 9 months here we have to celebrate the birthday of America. It'll be fun to see what you're doing. Maybe we'll have you back. Talk a little bit more. Give a report on Nova Scotia. I light the Canadians up with a little bit of freedom there, which is great. And good luck on the ice cream store. We're looking forward to the ribbon cutting there. And we'll put in the show notes links to your books and other materials so our listeners that want to learn more, can read. And I would encourage you. They're excellent, simple, easy, accessible, resources, not just for parents and people at the kitchen table, but also teachers in the classroom. Good primary or supplementary material for classroom materials.
Well, I'm assuming you recommend a particular set of curriculum for the homeschool groups that you teach. So maybe that's a place parents could start. Because I think there's a tailored message to youth on this topic.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Any final words you want to leave with our listeners here before we sign off?
Well, number one, I'm confident that better days are coming. I'm absolutely confident.
Amen to that.
And I think those that maybe are feeling a little bit of despair, don't feel the despair, right? I mean, we've got to continue to fight and we've got to continue to advocate for these ideals. But I believe that liberty is a God thing, right? Just as the founders recognized in that Declaration of Independence, they acknowledge the existence of a God, and that's where their liberty came from. That's what gives me confidence in our future, that our best days are ahead. So thank you so much. It was an honor to be with you.
Thank you, Shane.
Thank you, Shane.
Love having you here. If you like this episode, please like and share with someone who would find this interesting. We appreciate you listening to the American Classroom podcast today.
Thank you.
American Classroom is brought to you by Heritage Academy Mesa. Heritage Academy in Mesa, Arizona is a public charter school serving grades 7 through 12. Youth that come to Heritage are not just students, but scholars who are taught by the number one rated faculty in Arizona. If you'd like to learn more about Heritage Academy Mesa, please visit heritageacademyaz.com and click Mesa.